Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Kasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim, and our guest today is Matt. So, Matt, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us what you do and where you live.
Sure. Yeah, I live in Austin, Texas, second-time founder of a SaaS company called Summit. And Summit is a marketing and sales platform where sales marketing teams can build apps that are low-code and then use those to capture and enrich leads.
That's awesome. So how did you come up with the idea to start this company?
Ooh, I started out not really knowing who the customer was.
I had the initial idea for Summit really not knowing who the customer was going to be. I thought I knew who it was going to be. And my assumption was that I was going to sell a tool for an easier way, a better way to create financial models was the idea. I was frustrated with Excel and my inability to model my business finances is my first company, which I started in way back in 2007 and built for 12 years. And I just found using Excel to be very non-intuitive and difficult to really get a lot of the answers I was looking for as a company leader. So I started building this platform and ended up being wrong about the customer. It turns out that if you're just creating financial models and reports for internal teams, you love Excel and want to stick with it. But where we really ended up finding fit was with sales and marketing teams where they wanted to create interesting calculations, forecasts, tools for their audiences, but those audiences were not internal, they were external. So taking the same technology, core technology we built, refactoring a lot, turning it into a platform. But then that same idea of being able to create something with low code and publish it, we found our fit with sales and marketing teams instead. And it's been amazing ever since we figured that out.
So what was the core language, by the way? Was it Node or PHP?
It was Python. Python on the back end. Yeah. I've been a Python developer since I discovered it in 2004. Actually, I was at a friend's house and he showed me this cool language. I wrote PHP at the time and a new little JavaScript, but he showed me this cool little language called Python and some web frameworks. And I said, this is really interesting. Like, look how few characters and things there are. That's really clean. And, 19 years later, I'm still using it.
Oh, that's cool. And this website, must have some dashboards as well, and probably you are also providing some dashboard to your customers as well.
So our customers can actually build their own the dashboards. So what we provide is the core product, the lowest level, is really a development environment for them to use our tool to build their own apps and calculators and forecasts, etc. And when they create those, we provide them with a WYSIWYG interface where they can create their own charts, tables, graphs, and number displays to show to their audience. So it's really more like a retool, if you will, where our users are building dashboards for their own audiences. And so we have a lot of it, but we're really more of a help them create those dashboards platform.
And how you provide these applications to the customers, like upload these applications on their stores, Play Stores, or you hand over some code, or you are going to just give them some executables? What's the process?
So we built our own declarative language for, you know, similar to the way Shopify started out as a language called Liquid, where e-commerce, you know, developers could create their own stores. We created our own language where sales and marketing teams can create their own calculators and forecasts without writing any Python or JavaScript. So we gave them our own templating language, if you will, but it's also mathematical. And we gave an interface to create that. So similar how Replit has its own IDE, we have our own IDE for our users, but it's visual. And so if a marketer has used a tool like how they create email sequences, for example, with boxes and arrows, they can create mathematical logic with boxes and arrows. And then we compile that in Python. So that language for us, we actually built our own interpreter and compiler for that, which turns that into Python. And then when they ship their application, when they deploy it, what we're actually doing is we're creating a page on our site where and an API endpoint where all that logic can actually live and run through a simple interface. So their users end up getting a very familiar looking web app UI, but all the logic and code, it is Python and JavaScript, but our user didn't write any Python or JavaScript. They actually wrote this simple language we invented.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. And are you using any AI powered tools, or you are using AI within your project to support making things?
Yeah. So AI is really fascinating for us because of the fact that we are a development environment, an application hosting service, as well as a language. And really AI for us, that means AI for us can come in at many different levels. One is at the very bottom level of similar to Replit or GitHub, we can create our own autocomplete, right? Where people that are creating apps using our tooling can start typing some keystrokes and automatically get what they need, you know, auto-generated for them. That's one level. The other level where we've experimented with it more, and this was an interesting journey over the last 4 or 5 months, you know, when sales and marketing teams come to our platform to build something, sometimes they have a strong idea of what they want to make. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have told us they want some help in the ideation phase of, I know I want to make something for my audience. Let's say my audience is, you know, healthcare agencies, right? And so you're the CMO of a company that serves home healthcare agencies. What do you make for that audience? And if you've been in marketing your whole career, you know those tools, but you haven't really exercised that product muscle that much yet because you haven't really had the opportunity to come up with an idea and just build it. So what we started using AI for was to generate ideas for apps that they could, and we found it was incredible because we have that product DNA, but our customers sometimes don't. And so they'll have one idea, but they want five. Unfortunately, we don't have domain expertise. We don't know those industries the way our customers do because they live in it. So we went to GPT-4 specifically, and we said, hey, this is the platform. This is the user. These are their customers. And we asked GPT-4, what applications should they provide? What napkin math kind of application should they provide for their audiences? And it was, I would say, excellent 50% of the time. Now, the other 50% of the time, it was somewhere between mediocre and hallucinating, as we know. But we were blown away at its ability to automatically come up with ideas by mapping these two domains in a way that normally you would need a consultant that's versed in both domains. And AI, because of its incredible corpus, is versed in both domains. So we were able to just ask it to create application ideas, and it did that. So we have used AI there. That's more of a sales and marketing tool that we use internally to help our customers. But I think the future for AI and us is really, really using it at many different layers of our stack.
Okay. But you are just using the tool. In this regard, you're just using the tool. Would you please let me know if you are giving some sort of AI, some sort of AI, functionalities or facilities to your customers as well?
Not yet. No, not yet. We are really providing them with a low-code interface. And I would say this, because so much of the output of our tool is mathematics, you know, in a lot of ways, Python is just a better tool than token prediction. You know, we don't need a token predict 10 times, you know, 1.5 repeating. That should be done in a traditional language where you always get the same answer, right? So I think that for us, AI is more of a, like I said, it's more of a Replit GitHub style fit where if we can help them generate code, then we should do that. But we don't want to help them generate answers because the answers need to be mathematically correct all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Indeed. And by the way, are all your teams are distributed, or you have your own teams for everything, like for sales, for marketing, for development, for all sort of these things?
Yeah, we're very early stage, so we're a distributed team. But there's three of us. Sometimes, you know, some months we bring on a contractor. There's four. So I created the initial language. I'm also leading sales and marketing, but that's what I did at my first company as well. So I built the first version and then I ended up leading enterprise SaaS sales. I'm kind of a weird developer where I both love writing code, but actually I really love selling a great product just as much. So usually with my companies, I write the first version, get it to a place where somebody smarter than me on the development side can take it from there. And then I shift into a sales and marketing role. So that's what I do. We have a really gifted front-end developer who also is good at design, and he writes all the React and the front-end code. And then we have somebody that handles literally everything else in terms of ops, support, billing, legal, accounting, finance, all of that. So we're a pretty lean and mean team.
That's awesome. So you mentioned earlier that you're in Austin, Texas. How would you say that being in a place like Austin helps your business?
So I've been here for 10 years, moved here in 2013 when I was starting my first, 4 years into starting the first company, roughly. We raised a small amount of angel money. I would say the thing that Austin's always had, and I think there's other places like this too, is it might as well be Midwest in terms of its mentality. And I mean that in a good way of we are very B2B focused. Our roots are how do we create a lot of value for business customers. And, you know, I think because of that, it really helps you stay, I'd say, pretty grounded in terms of what are the opportunities that we still have today. So while, of course, AI is changing the world, and that's very exciting, what I love about being in Austin is there's no shortage of people who are here who are really excited about making lots of money, deploying the technologies that we figured out 5 years ago, right? And realizing that there are still so many opportunities to even build billion-dollar companies by just taking tech that's 2, 3, 4, 5 years old and applying it to domains and spaces that it still hasn't been applied to yet. You know, I think it's easy for technologists to always get high on the next thing. Austin, I would say, is sure, let's do that. But if you're the type of person who just wants to solve boring business problems and make lots of money doing it, this is a great place to be. Because you'll find other people who are just as excited about that kind of thing, you know? And I think that goes to our, you know, yes, we have DNA from decades ago, but more recently, Indeed.com. Who knew we needed another job hosting site that was worth billions? WP Engine, WordPress hosting. You know, these are the kinds of companies that we turn into billion-dollar businesses here. And I love that, you know, and I love being around founders who also love that.
That's awesome. Yeah, Austin's a great place. So in terms of, as of right now, are there specific industries that you're kind of more focused on serving?
Yeah, we're serving sales and marketing teams in a variety of industries, but I would say what they have in common is they all have a strong sales case when it comes to the ROI of their solutions. And that's something they want to show their customer. So those tend to be businesses that are in spaces where they're competitive, they're enterprise. There's a strong emphasis on the dollars and cents and the numbers behind the purchase. So less consumer in that sense, more, hey, we're selling a certain product. Maybe at the core, that product is a commodity, but we've added a lot of value around it. We want to show our customers the ROI of our solution, of our platform. You know, for us, that would mean things like finance, where the commodity at the end of the day is money. It doesn't get more commoditized than that. But everybody wants to show someone else, you know, why their money is cheaper, faster, better. We're a good fit for sales teams in those spaces. I would also say things like transportation. Again, you're moving something from point A to point B. It's all about cost and savings. And then other spaces, more like usage-based pricing. So text, video, audio, hosting, things where the buyer is very price sensitive, but the seller wants to, yes, I want to show you how we're cost competitive, but I also want to show you how we can improve your business metrics by 3%, 10% if you choose us, right? So those kinds of sales scenarios where the buyer is sensitive to the numbers tends to be where we shine, because after all, we're providing tools that let those sellers demonstrate the numbers.
That's awesome. So obviously we met on Twitter, but what would you say has been your number one channel of getting the word out, getting new customers, growing your business?
Twitter's been good. I would say, because I have a decent sized following there, I would say, and I'm sure a lot of people say this, LinkedIn has exceeded my expectations from a, you know, once you find your group and your channel, as I say, your people, I think you can always end up, you know, sort of screaming into the void in any media channel. But once you find a group, I think LinkedIn is actually pretty amazing. I also have a decent sized following there. So it's a little bit of bias there, of course. And I would say podcasts have been great too. You know, the number of people who say that I heard you on a podcast, but I'll say this a little bit differently. One thing that's been true is it takes time for an idea to gestate, right? It takes time for people to hear about this thing. We all know this, but I think it's easy, especially when you're starting a business, to not really understand that it's going to take 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes 6 months for someone to go, you know, I've been hearing you say that, but it didn't really register until now. And then they're ready to buy, right? So don't give up would be my sort of implication there of you might have followers, you might get a bunch of thumbs up, but it takes time for people to really get their heads around whatever it is you're doing. And that's normal.
Okay, great. So in the next 2 to 6 months, what are your top priorities?
Yeah, top priorities are releasing a solution that's focused on sales. So mm-hmm. We were originally focused on selling to marketers, build these apps and tools, put them into your funnels on your websites. People will come and use them. What we found was the sales teams at the businesses we were serving, the sales teams are kind of looking over at what was going on in marketing and said, wait a minute, you know, we could use that as a part of our selling process. And so we've been doing some interviews and learning more about what does a account executive need or a sales rep need out of us, Summit, to serve their process. And we're releasing that in the coming weeks. So that's exciting. And then I think, so that's our product work over the next month or two. And then really as a business, we're focused on customer acquisition. So going on more podcasts, be more vocal, be more crystal clear, sharing very clear examples with our audience where they don't have to imagine how this abstract thing applies to them. We can just say, look at what they did. This is what they did. This is why they did it. A little bit more, you know, mimetic would be the fancy way to say it, but a little bit more, you know, monkey do of like, oh, wait a minute, you know, we're not that different than them. If they can do it, if they're using it, why wouldn't we? And where I say that about myself, I'm the same way, right? Like once you see somebody like yourself doing the thing, it just becomes so much easier. So
yeah,
that's one nice thing. Now that we have our, you know, these anchor customers, sharing the testimonials and examples with our audience is our, I wouldn't say strategy, but I'll say this too, tactics, right? Like I think we're now at the stage where we can turn to what I'll call kind of boring tactics, as opposed to this fancy, you know, sophisticated strategy sessions all the time of what are we going to do next? It's like, you know what we need to do next? We just need to email 300 people, okay? It's not complicated, right? And in fact, if we overthink it, we're probably going to end up shooting ourselves in the foot because part of us doesn't want to just do that boring grind, right? But that's what it takes. You know, sometimes it takes just doing the boring stuff. So that's our plan.
That's great that you are good with the podcast and you welcome the podcast. So yeah, that's great. So if you welcome the podcast and we invite you in our podcast after 1 year, where do you see your business at that time?
I'll talk about where I want to see our business at that time. So, you know, at that time, we're now on a year from now, we are at, you know, 100 customers instead of our first few dozen. That means that we have that mini brand going. And Jason Lemkin talks about this mini brand where people that are into this space know you, they know what you do, they know who you are. That means word of mouth is finally starting to work, but not like in a, I know Matt and I know Matt's friends, so I'm going to reach out to Matt. Like that's word of mouth version one. Word of mouth version two is, yeah. Oh yeah, I was at an event and I heard about you because somebody told me and like, I wanted to learn more. So I really think creating that gravity around our brand is where I want to be so that, you know, momentum can keep going. And I think also at that point, being able to hire additional or bring on additional resources from a sales and marketing standpoint to really scale the business is where I want to get to. So right now we're in the grow one channel stage. I want to be in the, okay, and we can add additional parallel resources to that channel to grow faster, right? I think that's the dream. So that's where we want to be. And I think because we built the team to be very capital efficient, meaning the business. I don't think that necessarily means we have a huge headcount, but I think it means that the revenue is growing and our investors are excited.
That's cool. So what advice do you have for any aspiring founders, people who are, you know, not sure if they want to make that jump yet?
Yeah. Well, shameless plug here. I'll say I've written over 50 essays on that topic, which you can find at mattwensing.com. I love that topic because I've been an entrepreneur for 19 years now. And I would say that my primary advice is to learn how to think differently, examine things from different perspectives, and to really understand the assumptions that you're making before, you know, when you take that next step. You got to move, but when you move, when you take that step, what are the things that you're counting on to be true for this to fulfill your dream? So if you have this dream, talk to me about the pillars. What are the assumptions? This will this, this will this, this will that. Just write those down, right? Take the 15 minutes to write those down. And then I'll say this too, have a group that you email every month, week, whatever it is. I recommend week at the very beginning, month at that point. At the very top of that email, every single month or every single week, I want you to write blank is, you know, it's whatever company is, you know, my startup is a blank, and force yourself to just fill in that blank. It's one of the hardest exercises you'll ever do. But what's beautiful about it is just like with, if you're a coder, you know, just like with Git, version history, et cetera, you'll be amazed at how that one sentence evolves over time. You'll look back and you'll be embarrassed, but you'll also see the progress, but you have to force yourself to do it, right? It won't just happen on its own. In fact, you will hide from that exercise because it's so gut wrenching, right? It's so embarrassing. But do it, because that is the thing that you're going to repeat on podcasts like this, around the buffet line, wherever it is. You're going to have to learn how to tell people what is your thing. It's just extremely hard, and it's okay. You know, you're going to get better, but force yourself to do that. So write down your assumptions and write down what you are, and then be willing for those to evolve. Be my 2-minute suggestions.
That's awesome. So if somebody was going to find your company website, can you share it here? The best way to find, if you know, like any social media handles, you know, how they can find you and reach out to you.
Sure. The company is called Summit. You'll find us at usesummit.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Matt Wensing. And I, like I said, I have a blog as well. And I share a lot on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Well, Matt, thank you so much for your time. Very insightful. We're rooting for you at Summit.
Thank you.
And yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Thank you.